Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie is their simplest email. Bernie Walsh, Bernie, good afternoon. Our charity shops, I asked when I was talking to Neil an hour ago, I asked, are charity shops treasure troves or rubbish dumps?
Bit of both, Joe.
Okay.
A bit of both.
How long have you worked in one?
Oh, God. As soon as my children were going to school and I had a few hours, so give or take the last 20 years.
Okay, give us the treasure trove element. What could you find in a charity shop?
Oh, you find beautiful stuff, Joe, from people. I mean, there's a multitude of things. You find beautiful sentimental pieces that belong to people, people that passed away, and it doesn't or does mean something to somebody that you can forward it on to that type of person again the next time, you know, from holy statues to clothing to pots and pans, you know.
Okay.
What I mean?
And everything is in a charity shop is a once off, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, give me the rubbish dump.
Joe, it's like any walks of life. There's always a few bad apples in the cart, you know.
Okay.
People basically, I said 95% of the people are wonderful people that donate, and we are ever so grateful, no matter what charity.
Okay, I know that. Well, give me the example. Yeah. Do people actually, Bernie, leave bags of rubbish?
Oh, yes, all the time. They hand in bags of rubbish. Not only do they leave them outside the doorstep, they hand in bags of rubbish. They might put one item of good stuff on top, like a folded jumper, and then you suddenly unearth this. Especially after COVID, people were doing their clear outs, and even prior to that, people were like, Mary has gone off to college, I'll empty her drawers, let's dump it all into the black plastic bag. Yeah.
And what would be in the rubbish?
You name it. You think of something, you find it. You know, dirt, basically. Dirt. The stuff that we, as charity shops, have to go to recycle centres and pay to get it recycled.
But when you say dirt, do you mean stuff that is dirty?
I won't even repeat it on radio, Joe. From underwear and socks, from a teenager's makeup drawer that was that way for the last 10 years, just literally dumped into a black plastic bag.
Okay, oh, rubbish. Yeah. So you work in the Mokara charity shop,
yes,
which is...
it's Mokara, it means my friend.
Mokara, so and it's an animal rescue charity, and it's based in Tipperary. Okay. And
yeah, Ringcastle.
Do you get different... You know the way people say, oh, that was a quality skip? Do you get, when they're skip diving, do you get people, would wealthy people, so to speak, or posh people, would they bring in better stuff than others?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes they're the ones that are worse. Sometimes it's the poor little Mary, Joe or Jack that will bring you in their valued little possession because they love animals or whatever reason.
The little gem. Okay, Brandy. Alan Mitchell. Alan, good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe?
Yeah, you've a difficult experience. Go ahead, Alan.
I came across a treasure trove, all right, Joe. I was in the charity shop, dropping in some stuff, and I noticed the lady was emptying the bags.
Okay.
And next thing, empty CDs. And I couldn't believe it. Empty CDs, rubbish, garbage, stuff you'd never use. I couldn't believe it. I was absolutely shocked. I was like, oh, my God. I felt so sorry for these charitable workers. You know, they're doing a job and they have to pay to get this stuff disposed of. It's a disgrace. I think people should be more conscious of what they're doing.
And you went into a little reverie, which you sent to us. Go ahead, let's listen to it.
You wouldn't believe this, guys. I'm down here in the charity shop, okay? I'm just bringing stuff down and I just noticed the lady emptying the bag. And here you go. Look, people are putting in empty... There's one. Hang on, open the rest of them there, see? What's in that one? That one's empty. Like, sending your rubbish in is very unfair. Like, these ladies are doing charitable work here. Christ almighty, guys. Have a bit of cop on. And, like, what the f*** is this, guys? Why would you want to send that to a charity shop? In all f***ing fairness, excuse me. Like, come on. have a bit of respect for people in town. In all fairness, they're trying to do a job.
And that was in, where was that, Alan, in Port Arlington?
That was in the Sue Ryder charity shop downtown. Yeah, I got a little bit irate.
Why did you get so irate?
I couldn't believe people were actually using the charity shop as a dump. Now, I know the vast majority of people don't do that. You know, in all fairness, people are very good and they're charitable and they do send down lots of good stuff. You can see them in the shop. It's all displayed very nicely. It looks like a standard supermarket shop. You know, it's fantastic. Mm. But the thing is, the dirt that they have to accept from a minority of the people, it's a disgrace.
Okay. Stay there, Alan. Mary Farrell. Mary, you found charity shops to be a treasure trove.
I did, yes.
And what did you find?
Well, you have to be passing the right shop at the right time.
Okay.
So it's up in Fibsborough, actually, the Oxfam shop. I found a sewing machine for €5.
And did it work?
Well, there was no pedal with it now, but I had a similar sewing machine in the house. And I tried the pedal and it was working perfect.
Well done.
I oiled it up. I lubricated the machine and off it went.
And you were back in stitches within minutes.
I was.
Okay, what else have you found?
And I found, I found a microwave about 5 years ago in another shop that's closed down now in Fibsborough. But I'm still using it for €10.
Ah, oh, magic. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. Well
and
done.
I'm still using it.
Well done.
And I got a radio CD and tape player for €7 in another shop up in Fairview. And I'm using the radio at the minute.
Well done. And how often would you go to charity shops?
Well, I do just for a look, you know, but I wouldn't buy, I just look, I don't usually buy because I don't see anything in there. If I see something I'm interested in, you know, you have to know what you're looking for.
Of course. And Mary, when you're walking into the charity shop, is there a sense of excitement about you never know what's going to be here?
Not really. You just have to look and the stuff, you know.
Because you never know when you're going in what you're going to buy, sure
no,
you don't.
No, you don't know what you're going to find. No.
So, how often would you go to once a week?
Oh, no, when I'm passing one, I go in. If I'm passing one,
you can't pass a charity shop.
Well, I don't buy clothes now because I'm not very small size. But you find the clothes which are a small size, they wouldn't fit me.
And do you think, Mary, would some people not go into a charity shop?
Well, I think so. I think people are brought down to their senses. Years ago they wouldn't, but I think they do now.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that's
I think it wasn't good enough for them maybe a couple of years ago, but now it's good enough for them to go in. But I never thought like that. I always went into them, and it's nothing to do with a financial thing with me.
It's, you might find something interesting.
Yes, exactly.
And did you find a trolley shopper?
Oh yes, I forgot about the trolley. Top of the North Circle Road in the Tesco Super, near the Tesco supermarket. I went in looking and I saw this trolley shopper for €5, so I bought it.
And you mean a trolley shopper? Do you mean a
for food? For,
yeah,
a
you know, but
do you mean
a four-wheel front push or a
oh,
two-wheel
yes,
back
perfect.
Pull?
And it was and it's a four-wheel trolley shopper and it was sturdy and I knew it was
excellent.
You have to know what you're looking for in these shops.
And you checked and there was a four-wheel front push. And was it in the tartan or what was the fabric?
A tartan cover.
Ah, they're worth.
No, but this was an old frame.
Year.
It wasn't. The new ones are not as strong.
Oh,
but I knew this
point.
Frame was strong. This
well
was a good
done.
Strong one.
Well done. Well done. Say there, Mary. Willie Hughes is in Waterford. Joe at RT.ie, 1850715815. Willie, you love charity shops.
Well, yeah, Joe, I love them because if someone looking for something, Joe, I would find it. No, I'll give you an example. CDs, Joe, a friend of mine wanted Glenn Miller, Seamus Butler, a friend of mine. And I said to Seamus, I'll find that fine. So I went downtown. I went into the charity shop up by one of the side streets. Upstairs, and here was Glenn Miller face me
waiting
in a box
for you,
and a CD.
Waiting for you.
Grabbed it, yeah, but you have to know, Joe, what you're looking for. Now, another day, I went into the St. Vincent de Paul shop over by Tesco, and I was looking for a press. And there was someone praying, because I came in the road, I was at the middle of another charity shop on the Cork Road, and I came in, and something telling me to it. I said, put down the boot, Joe, you know, move fairly quick. I jumped right into the charity shop, jumped out of the car, straight to hunt for Red October, Joe. came across this press. The Jenny Woman statue of the day, no joke.
You won, okay. So you had, you, if something came over you that you knew you were going to be lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
So you ran into the charity shop. You
jumped out of the car.
Okay.
I ran in.
Yeah.
And I saw this press from me. They call it a chest, but I didn't realise. It's like one you see in a big boardroom, Joe.
Okay.
So it's 250, and the sign on it says 130, reduced.
Okay.
And I said to the girls, "Why are they getting paid that year, Joe, to the bank, you know?" And I said, "How much is it?" He said, 130. I said, "Do you take a card?" Because I knew that would be gone, because it's going to be gone within a minute if I don't buy it now.
Okay, yeah.
So I said, "Take the card, it's a grand now." She said, "Why, how are you going to get out the door?" Well, I said, "There's about 300 with Joe." So I said, "Yeah, I see your van out the back." She said, "The man's on his own. Doesn't matter." I said, "Give him a hand." So I got it into the van.
Okay.
He said, "Where's the water side?" I said, "Follow me." Got it over. Took all the drawers out, Joe. Bought it in. Set it up.
Beautiful.
And put the glass top on it, Joe, which you could take off. So I put a big cover over that, Joe. A white linen cloth I had somewhere. I got it at a charity shop. Put that on it. Put the television on it, Joe. The radio on it and the DVD, Joe. And it's a beautiful press. And it came out of the American Embassy in Dublin.
No.
And it was made in Alaska, Joe. I got someone to check it on a computer.
And how old do you think it was, Willie?
I said it's in the 80s, Joe. It's made in the 80s.
So I'm just thinking, all the American presidents have been here. Nixon, Reagan, George Bush. Well, George Bush Senior was here, not George Bush Junior.
And Clinton, Joe.
And Barack Obama. And they've all been up in the American. Is it the American Embassy or the American Ambassador's residence?
No, the American Embassy. Joe.
Oh, lovely!
Came out
great,
there.
Great, great, great.
Now it could have came from the West Wing in America. I don't know.
Okay,
it did, Joe. It's worth a fortune.
Okay. No.
Now also, Joe, I got chairs to have a nun's convent.
Okay.
I got CDs. I got books, Joe. My daughter was looking for books for a friend of hers who's studying something to do with the health board, Joe, or something.
Okay.
And I got a book, Joe, that was costing about 80 quid. I came across it for 1 euro.
Good God.
You come across stuff that you want, Joe. Now, I know there might be things, but I wouldn't. I'd buy coats over at the charity shop, Joe. I got a coat, they said it was waterproof, Joe, and I put it in the washing machine to dry when it came out, Joe. We ain't joking. you get the best of stuff, Joe. But I wouldn't.
What would you not buy in a charity shop?
I wouldn't buy shoes, Joe. I have a thing about shoes. I wouldn't buy shoes, or I wouldn't buy.
Why? Why wouldn't you buy shoes?
I don't know, Joe. Someone said to me, "Don't be wanting it." You know, but I kind of put you off. But I don't want to be half tempted at times, Joe. But I wouldn't buy shoes. I buy jackets. I buy a Crombie coat. I buy a Duffel coat. I buy shorts, Joe, that are in the pack. You know, if they can go.
Oh, still, yeah.
And,
but you won't. You won't walk in another man's shoes.
It might be the wrong size anyway.
No, but I mean, even if to wear, you won't walk in another man's shoes.
Ah, no, that's Joe, I'd rather buy the shoes down there.
Yeah, and you think that's something to do with luck, or?
I don't know. I heard someone saying, "Yeah, don't buy a pair of shoes for someone." You know, I don't know if his mother said it or my sister, Joe. It kind of put me off that way. But, yeah, Joe, if you're stuck for a pair of shoes, Joe,
I know. Okay, you won't buy shoes, you won't buy trousers. What's the picture? What the picture of the train?
I got a lovely picture, Joe, of a steam engine with a train coming down the tracks in colour.
Okay.
So I said to myself, I must get a picture alongside it with the water running, a smaller picture frame, where it was a stream on the right, which is kind of a little river. And I got that. And then I said, "Oh, fuck it, I need another one at the other side, Joe, to match up, you see." And I got a clock as well. So I went over and I rode around, Joe, and I got another picture frame with the water on the left-hand side with another stream. So they're side by side, and it all matches, all kind of matches up perfect with the train, Joe.
And did you ever come across Willie? And I'll ask Breed up now, and I'll ask Alan. Did you ever? Though Alan's given out about the fact that the charity shop workers have to endure taking such rubbish. But there was a painting that went around, a print of a painting. The painting's in the National Gallery that went around for years, and that was a blind piper. Does that mean anything to you? By a fellow called Joseph Haverty. It was a very popular print in Irish homes. And we've just discovered that the painter, Joseph Haverty, is buried in Glasnevin in Dublin. But he's buried, believe it or not, in an unmarked grave. And his paintings are worth millions. Millions. John, say there, Willie.
Never
John,
came across that, Joe. Never came across
the blind piper. The print of the blind piper.
No, never come across that, Joe.
Okay, stay there, Willie. John. In Dublin.
Hello, hello, Joe. Yes.
Yeah.
How are you doing? I'm actually in Carlo, but anyway.
Okay. So tell us.
I often give in things to charity, you know, and some time back I gave in some really lovely clothes I had in mind. And a few days later I had kind of second thoughts and I went back and I bought them back out of the charity shop again.
Well done.
They were much cheaper, actually. The second time I bought them, they were way cheaper.
But you're buying them.
I originally bought. I got them at a reduced price.
Well, that's a great idea. We'll all try that now. Save yourself a few bob. What was it about the clothes that made you have second thoughts?
God, I was thinking, God, sure, they're the best of clothes ever.
Yeah.
You know, the best of designer stuff I had. So I just said, God, I may go back and get those again.
And do you still go? Would you go to charity shops?
I would occasionally, yeah. Up and down. Good place to get maybe a bit of furniture.
Well, there's an explosion of them. You know that all over the country at the minute. A massive explosion of them. Yeah. Okay, John, good to meet them all. Good. Brida, 51551 is the text number. Brida, what happened in the charity shop?
I went in to have a look and...
We know what you didn't buy in the charity shop. You didn't buy a new mobile phone, or it's not your mobile phone, it's probably the signal. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RTE, well, loads more in charity shops later on. Two calls about miraculous savings from drowning, thank God. Fran, good afternoon.
How are you, Doug?
Fran is in North Dublin. What happened, Fran?
It was a summer's day and we went down to Rogerstown Beach and the kids were playing.
And Rogerstown is near Rush, scary.
Rush. Yeah. And the kids were playing, having fun, and then within seconds, it's like a current. Happened, and the kids just couldn't get out of it. So my sister-in-law went in first, and then my husband went in, and there was four kids in the water.
Good.
And then they all got into difficulty, so another man, Sean, went in with his son, Alex, which is 14, and then another couple went in, but then they were all in difficulty, and then three other men then kind of formed a human rope and eventually got everybody out.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was very frightening. It happened within seconds.
So at one stage, many people were in difficulty.
There was my husband, my two kids, my sister-in-law, her two kids. And then I think Sean and Alex got into a bit of difficulty at one stage. And then there was eight adults at one stage in the water and five kids.
So eight and a teenager of eight.
Teenager and four young kids.
13 people.
Yeah.
And were there any lifeguards? Or?
No lifeguards, no rings to throw into the water. There was absolutely nothing. As my eight-year-old son said, it was like something was dragging at his legs and pulling them underneath the water.
I'm talking to Fran Kinsler. Fran, was there any was there any signs up saying...
No signs at all to say dangerous area or anything like that.
And when when they all got back out of the water safely...
Yeah.
What did you do? Did you pack up and leave or...?
No, we kind of stayed around for a while and we were talking to Emma and Sean and her child, Alex, and the two other kids.
Okay, because...
I was thanking the three lads. I never got their name. And there was another couple as well. We kind of all just stood around in shock for a while.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. It was very,
and
very
hard. At any stage, Fran, did you think you were going to lose people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely thought at one stage they were gone. I couldn't even look. My sister-in-law, she went under. My husband, it's like as if the current kind of ripped him around the pier. But then eventually I seen his head pop up. But yeah, it was a very close call at one stage.
And you're saying literally you were looking at people being swept out to sea and they're waving or whatever, trying to get help.
Yeah, so my nephew was trying to save my son and then my daughter was trying to save my nephew. So it's like the kids were trying to all help each other.
Yeah. And you don't know who those three men were who formed the chain?
I don't, to be honest with you, no. I couldn't. I tried to find them through Facebook and everything.
What day of the week was it, Fran?
It was a Sunday, I think.
Sunday, okay.
Saturday or a Sunday.
And what, about 5 or 6 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And Emma Nixon was caught up in the same horrific incident.
Yeah.
Emma, tell us what your memory of it.
Yeah, no, we were on the Rogerstown Beach there and... So basically, I could see the four little kids out playing, and as they were tossing around, the current was going out further and further. And what happens there, Joe, is the current so strong that it takes the sand away from underneath. So the kids went into a dip. Because we went down the following day, and it's a really big dip. Like, so everybody that ran in then, because we noticed the kids were in difficulty, everybody that ran in went off that ledge and into the dip. So, and the current was so strong, it was just, you know. So I told my husband, quick run, and then he ran in, and he went off that ledge as well, trying to push everyone. And next of all, I look, and then there's my 14-year-old son is in there. So all of a sudden now, I'm going, oh my God, this is three families now. And within seconds, it got really bad. And I was like, oh my God, I can't get in here, because if I get in, I'm only going to be someone else that needs to be saved. So I just turned and screamed for help. So there was a lovely guy that was there with his wife. He ran in first. And then two lads that were up in the grass area ran in. And then another girl, Roisin, she came over and ran in. And within minutes, everybody was taking everyone out.
And was any, Emma, was any of your group, were any of them good swimmers?
Well, my husband, like, you see what happened there, Joe, is like my own father warned me. He always said, Emma, don't be careful down there. Rogerstown is known that the current is so strong. So I'd say the best of swimmers would have struggled in that situation. It was, yeah. And I think when you go down, you would have to see that dip, you know, that, and again, like, really, if there was a sign there, because a lot of people run and jump off that pier, and if there was a sign there, it would have been great. But there is a boy, but it's up at the sailing club, so it wouldn't have been near enough. Like, nobody knew on the beach what was happening. Everyone just assumed, oh, look at them, they're all having fun. Like, it got out of control. I've never witnessed anything like that in my life. It was really, really worrying. And I think I knew by looking, I remember looking at Alex's face, my son, and he was holding one of, I don't know if it was one of Fran's kids or her sister-in-law, and I knew by his face, he was like, ma'am, I'm struggling here, you know, and yeah, it was horrendous.
And you say, is it a jetty or a pier that people jump off?
Is it a pier?
Who owns it?
So I think that pier, I know a boat goes over to, is it Lambeth?
Oh, yeah, one of the islands, yeah.
I think
it's
privately owned.
Okay.
And
is it, Emma, that people think that they're swimming at an estuary, which is where the river goes into the sea or whatever, and it's a relatively narrow gap. Do they think if I swim inside the gap, in other words, on the land side, it's safer than swimming in the open sea?
I honestly think the funny thing was, is after this happened, so many people came forward and said, oh, we got into difficulty down there. Oh, my God. Like, I think it's what happens is it fills up when the current's coming in so fast. And it comes, and when it's going out, it goes out so fast that, like, you'd even see lads jumping in and they'd float down with the current. Wow. Because that's how fast, you know.
And, like, who Emma, who owns the beach? Do we know?
It's part of the sailing club, I think. I'm not sure if it is.
And are there any signs up saying this is a? There are no life. Do you say there are no life boys? No lifeguards.
There is a boy. There is one at the sailing club, and there is one there. But like in that situation, no one would have been able to get to that and back there. Like so, someone would have been gone in that amount of time. That's how bad the situation was getting. But I do think that they just need a sign up on that wall to say there is a dip there that, you know, just even say danger or, you know, strong current or something, because, you know, it was really scary, I have to say, just to see how quick it went so bad.
Wow. And Emma, did you think people were going to be lost? With 13 people that were in difficulty at any one time.
Well, it's like you're standing there looking at something, and then all of a sudden I realised, oh God, my husband and my child is there now, and then nobody was able to get out. It was like, you know, so the only thing I could do was scream for help, because I was never going to be someone that was able to pull anyone out or, you know, I wouldn't be a strong swimmer or anything like that. But I have to say, fair play to the people on that beach that day. They ran. I mean, they just ran in, and within seconds, people were being pulled out. Like my husband said, he was pushing and pushing to try and push them off back onto the... Sean said, if I could just get them back onto the sand...
Yeah, they're all out of depth so quickly.
They were all out, and everyone was getting tired. Like, I could see the little kids' faces. They were all... Everyone was exhausted. It was... Yeah, it was really scary, I have to say.
Okay, what a lucky escape. And how were you afterwards, Emma?
Well, that's it. Like, again, it was nearly shock. And it was only when I came home, and of course, I rang my mum, for everything. And I was telling her, I got really upset then because, yeah, it was really, and I just remember looking at my little boy's face and thinking, oh my God, he's in trouble here now. And, you know, so, yeah.
So you're saying the Rogerstown estuary near Donabate, Port Rand there in North Dublin, avoid it for swimming?
Yes, unless you're aware of it. Like, it's a lot of the like,
drop.
Two of those lads that ran in to save, like, to help get everyone out, they said that they're swimming there years, so they're so used to the way the water is.
And but your description is brilliant. You say when the tide goes out, the sand goes out with it, so you've no footing. You're out of your depth all of a sudden.
You're out of your depth. And that's what happened to the four little kiddos. They were floating out, thinking everything's fine, and then that was it. They hit that. So, yeah.
Okay, well done. God save all of you now. Well done.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Emma Nixon and Fran Kinsler. That is some story. Right, we'll try and find out who owns the beach. Is there any obligation on anyone to put up signs? They even know no swimming. Okay, thanks, Fran. Thanks, Emma. Go back to charity shops for a sec. Mary Forsyth, you worked in a charity shop. What was handed in?
A bag of clothes came in and there was a crumbly coat. A beigey colour Crombie coat, and I said, I'm going to do me dad.
Okay.
And I got my boss, I think it was €7 or whatever.
So. And Mary, if you work in a charity shop, if you work in a charity shop...
I did, I done one day a week, just voluntary, you know, I was only, the kids were young and I couldn't go out to work because I had to mind the kids, so I used to do a couple of hours once a week out in the multiple sclerosis shop in Bray, excuse me.
And the question I was going to ask, most people work voluntarily, but have you any perks, like can you, if something good comes in, can you make the first bid on it?
Yes,
okay.
You can.
Well,
and get paid the same price as what they put it on.
Of course, yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? You don't want to bargain, it's for charity.
You saw the crumbly.
Whatever they put on it, you'd get it for, you know?
Yeah, but that's only right.
So, I just thought it would suit me dad, you know?
And did it.
And it turned out, my dad is an Xbox. He was an Xboxer. And he was a boxer in his youth and he was involved in the Xboxers Association. So, they were doing the film called The Boxer.
Oh, yeah, with Daniel Day, Jim Sheridan,
The crew came to the club, the association my father's involved in, and they were looking for Xboxers just speaker parts or nothing, extras in the film. So dad was picked, and so you actually see him in three times in the movie, and he has the crumbly coat on him.
Brilliant.
He's actually sitting there when they're introducing the charity match of the box in the boxer. My dad is sitting in the audience, and supposed to be so. They say, now we have, I can't remember the name Joe, so and so's father and mother, and there's my dad, and a brilliant picture of him
in
the crumbly coat.
So, and is your dad still with us?
No, he's not, unfortunately. Okay. No, he's not.
Okay, and where's was the coat kept as an heirloom? Or?
My sister still could have it. I'm not sure now.
It's
a lovely coat.
Nice.
A really good quality.
And have you ever come across anything else?
No, not really. No. I used to just sell. I wasn't upstairs sorting out the stuff. I'd just be down on the floor and I'd do a bit of ironing and serving at the, you know.
Well done.
It was a nice experience walking there, I have to say.
Well done. And what was the charity that was benefiting?
The MS.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Multiple cirrhosis, Okay, Mary Forsyth, thanks indeed. Paul Ryan. Paul is the newly appointed manager of St. Vincent de Paul Living Furniture Charity Store in Limerick.
Hi, Joe.
How many Vincent de Paul charity shops are in Ireland now? Vincent de Gaulle.
There's over 230.
My God. That's a bigger chain than Aldi, Lidl and Tesco combined.
It is, second largest retailer in the country.
Are you serious?
It's the sixth furniture store, and the Limerick one will be the biggest. It's a 7,000 square foot shop. And I just wanted to emphasize the importance of these shops, because it is pre-loved. Like, the idea is pre-loved items. It's not supposed to be garbage. People who do give garbage is the reverse of charity. It's costing the charity shop
to get rid of it, which is where we started, yeah.
Yeah, with a society like St. Vincent de Paul, the money's going back locally. They give over €1 million every week.
Of course. Into the local so what type of furniture do you get in pre-loved?
You name it. I mean, the only thing we don't take mattresses, we don't take duvet pillows, we don't take electrical for obvious reasons.
Well, just in case it might be, you can't verify
well,
that.
Well, with electrical, you can't. Yeah. If it caused a fire, if something like a duvet could have someone who's had a skin disorder, you don't know. So those things you don't. But I've been collecting now for the last 3 weeks for this shop that we open next month.
Mm-hmm.
And the support that we get is phenomenal. And I mean that from the people that they're delighted to be giving things that, like, I collected the most beautiful wardrobe that was the lady's mother's wardrobe, the Victorian, so well made.
Wow.
To see something like that, if that went to a landfill, it's a sin. You know, I mean, it'd just be disgraceful to see something like that just go.
And it's environmentally friendly to keep all this stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, and that is our ethos with that it should be, you know, sustainability, to replace, to upcycle. It's not recycle, it's upcycle and replace. And hopefully, I mean, I'd like to let people of Limerick know that Vince's now are collecting furniture. They can ring any of the three shops that are in Limerick and they'll get in touch with myself and would be happy to take the good items. And, you know, we don't want to have to pay to get rid of things. So it is, we will...
pre-loved and saleable. Stay there, Paul. Deirdre Hogan...
Hi, Joe.
You had an experience in a charity shop. What happened?
I did. A little bit unfortunate incident. My poor mum passed away in January.
Okay.
And I decided in there some weeks back to bring her summer clothes to a local charity shop in South Dublin, which I did. I had them all washed, ironed, folded, and in a box, which is probably a little bit over the top.
No,
but anyway.
That's nice. It was your mother's clothes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and she would have kept them beautifully all the time. So I arrived with the box. Anyway, to meet a quite stony-faced lady at the shop.
Okay.
And she said to me, the first greeting was, well, you need to take back the box. Don't have a problem with that because that's recycling and no problem. I don't expect them to be stuck with it.
Yeah.
But I presumed that I would be allowed to leave them folded on a shelf.
Yeah.
But the next instruction was, shove them into a plastic bag there.
Ah.
So she flung a black plastic bag at the floor and I was on the floor with the clothes, crying, which was ridiculous. We have to steam them all, almost like the inference was that they were dirty. Mm. Now, I fully understand that they have to be steamed with what's going on around the place. Fully understand it. Don't have any difficulty with that. But I just thought a little bit of customer service training and a little bit of empathy wouldn't have gone astray.
And had you said before they dumped all your mother's newly ironed and freshly laundered clothes on the floor, did they ask you anything about them? Or is
there any, not at all.
People love to hear the story of...
Joe, I actually felt like an inconvenience, to be quite honest. Now, the lady may have been on her own. It was a Saturday morning. But that doesn't take from the fact that, you know, they need to consider where people are coming from.
Yeah,
Mum was only 5-6 months dead. And it was a really hard thing to get rid of her summer clothes. And I thought, oh, God, I'll have to go with them one of these days.
Okay,
so
Sheila, stay there, Deirdre, because Sheila works in a charity shop. Sheila, I presume... You do take care of people who are bringing in items of great sentimental value.
Oh, of course we do, Joe, and we really appreciate everything we get because one person's, everybody needs something.
Yeah.
Now, the best dressed men around Killester and Clontarf buy their suits in our charity shop in Vincent's Killester.
Why?
We have Louis Copeland suits for €30.
Okay.
And beautiful new suits, you know, fabulous stuff. You know yourself, Joe, plenty of our money around Clontarf and people on Killester and they bring in their stuff.
A Louis Copeland suit for €30.
Yes. I've sold them on occasion and there was two lovely brand new suits. I can't remember... Canelli or something like that last week.
Canelli. So it's nearly worth Louis Copeland's while to go in and buy them back. Get them off the market.
Yeah. I would say Louis Copeland would be delighted to realise that his stuff has been recycled.
Yeah, well, that's all
I'm
clothes.
I'm just so
all
sorry
clothes.
I didn't meet that lady wherever
yeah,
I went.
That's
you know,
true,
unfortunately,
yeah.
I didn't.
No, no, we're very nice. I think, yeah. Well, most of us are very nice yeah. in Vincent and Kilester.
Well,
and
as I've said,
really
now, I won't be going back. You know, I will bring the rest of them.
I'm very sorry to hear that. I hope it wasn't a Vincent's charity
no,
show.
No, don't say, don't give the name
wasn't.
Of the show.
No,
okay, Sheila, what fascinating items have you got in, apart from half a Louis Copeland shop in Capel Street that ends up in Kilesa?
Well, we got a lovely lantern, for example, last week. A big, big lantern that you could put in the hall, and it was priced at $7.50. Now, I would have bought it myself, only in our charity shop, the stuff has to be left out on display for about, I think it's 72 hours before the staff can buy it, before the volunteers can buy it.
Okay.
So we can't grab, like the woman said before.
Okay.
We can't grab stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone would begrudge you that, because you're all volunteers. And
I know, well, we do get a discount, Joe, but, you know.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, let me sure it's for a charity.
Yeah, here.
And if you're given charity anyway, you might as well have a bit of fun out of it and buy something.
Okay. Yeah,
like
absolutely.
We have pots and pans and
Sheila,
would you have
people that come in every day?
I don't know. I only work on Wednesday morning and Saturday morning. But we would have people who come in. Yes, we do actually. I know a fellow who comes in nearly every day, I believe. Every day I am there anyway.
And he'd say, is that in second hand?
Well, they go and they look, like some people are very interested in the books. Because we recycle the books, we change the books every so often so that people who are regulars can see a new set
idea.
Of books. And then the books go back into Sean McDermott Street and they redistribute them, the ones that we haven't sold.
Great
idea. Yeah, it's a great system.
Okay, Sheila Deegan, Paul Ryan and Deirdre Hogan. Deirdre, condolences on your mother's passing. Sounds like a wonderful woman. Thank you all. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Well, we know one thing that Jerry Neely won't find in the charity shop, but he is looking for it, and that is his tractor from his childhood. Give us the full details, Jerry.
Joseph, how are you doing?
Good, good, good.
Full details. As I said to your researcher this morning, it could be more stupidity than nothing else.
Okay.
It was a tractor that was bought on the family farm by my brother.
Okay.
Back in 1972, brand new.
Okay.
And I've been trying for about 6 or 7 years to see if I could locate it. And I got a little tip on from the Vehicle Registration Office that this is about 5 years ago, that was in County Clare, but due to freedom of information or whatever, they couldn't give me any more information. So I kind of let it sit for a couple of years and done nothing about
it.
It's
niggling at you all along, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. Yes,
so
yes.
I rang the local Garda station in Tullamore, and I got talking to a very nice lady, and I gave her a number of that and another tractor that I was kind of interested in, and she had a bit of fun with this. She was saying, like, boys in their ties, just buying something because, you know, you had it years ago, or sentimental value or
so
whatever.
Tell
but
us,
anyway,
will you give us a make of the tractor and the reg number?
The make of the tractor is a Massey Ferguson.
All right.
It's a model number is a 148.
Okay.
And the reg number is the old Offaly reg. It's K for Kevin, K-I-R 554.
554, okay. And why is it just that tractor you want? Why can you not buy can you not find a replica of it somewhere?
No, not interested in the replica. I'm not interested in the same type, the same model. I'm only interested in that. If I can find that, I'll try and buy it. If I can't find that, I'm not interested in buying anything. Do you know what I mean? It's just that particular tractor because of I was 13 when it came onto the family farm, and sure, I mean, it was like you were in heaven, you know what I mean? Brand new tractor to drive around the fields and maybe sometimes on the road, even though I wasn't legally able to do it, but we done it nevertheless.
And what age were you when you were driving KIR 554?
Well, it came on the farm when I was 13 and it left about maybe 5-6 years later. So.
And what do you love about it? It's a tractor.
Ah, sure, yeah, but you're looking, there's all sorts of degrees of madness, isn't there?
It's true, true. And much would it be worth back in 1972?
It was bought brand new for £1,600.
Okay.
Now, you wouldn't get the two back wheels off it today for £1,600, I would imagine. It would, especially, so some person could have this tractor restored to within an inch of its life, if you know what I mean, and it could be worth £30,000 or euros. I don't know.
Okay. So you're looking for a massive...
If it was done, if it was restored to that level, it would be beyond my pay scale. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So I'd be hoping that it would be the back corner of a yard somewhere and the tin work rotten on it and the engine probably seized and some lad said, Jesus, the sooner
but people,
I get rid of
people
it,
love doing that. People love doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so that's what I said. Everyone has a different form of madness.
Did it have a safety cab on it?
It did. Yeah. The safety cab legislation came in. In, if I can remember rightly, 1970, maybe 71, yeah, but this tractor had it, yeah.
It's hard to believe that we were selling tractors in Ireland up to 1970 that if they rolled over, they'd kill you.
That's right. That's correct.
Hard
yeah.
to believe. Well, hard to believe.
Nobody knew any better, I suppose. It just developed.
And what was it like to ride in it? What was it? Do you remember?
Sure, it was rough. I mean, there was no suspension and you bounced along. Okay. But it was no worse or no better than any tractor. You know,
okay.
It came with a spring suspension seat, as the market imply was. But you wouldn't, if a man bought a tractor today with the seat quality that was in that, he wouldn't bring it home.
Some of the nouns, I haven't been at the ploughing since it stopped 2 years ago, but I used to love climbing up into the tractor, the new tractors.
That's right, yeah.
And they were like business class on Aer Lingus flying to America.
Better. Far better.
Radios, yeah. Televisions, microwaves, yeah. Kettles, jacuzzis,
computers,
sound, everything.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do
a
day. And you
don't even have to steer them. They're all GPS steered.
You just press a button and they go and they'll harvest and they'll plough. And you could be there on your iPad buying holidays in the Caribbean or whatever.
Stay there
for a sec, Jerry, because we've an expert on tractors. Now, he's not a Massey Ferguson expert. He is an expert, I think, on four tractors. Philip Warren is in Devon in the UK. Philip, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
And tell us about what is your expertise? How many tractors do you have, Philip, at the minute?
I think you're going a bit far saying when I'm an expert.
Okay. How many tractors do you have?
I have quite a collection of Ford tractors, and I do know a little bit about them.
How many tractors do you have?
I'm selling 83 complete tractors on Saturday, together with four you can buy in kit form. You build your own.
And when did you start collecting Ford tractors, Philip?
1990-ish.
And why?
Oh, why? Yeah, that's a big question. Why? I've always been I'm a farmer always worked with Ford tractors. And I went to a sale, not intending to buy a tractor at all, but I went to this particular sale, and there was this Ford 5000 with what they call a SOS gearbox.
The SOS gearbox, Philip.
Yes.
That's very
rubbished by everybody, and don't buy one of them, don't touch them with a barge pole.
Okay.
And they were having a job to sell this tractor that day, and... Billy Muggins here poked the auctioneer in the back and bought it. And
do you remember how much you paid for it, Philip?
I think it was around £650.
Okay, back
It was very cheap on the day for a Ford 5000. That's why I bought it, because it seemed ridiculously cheap. It was very, very tatty, mine, but it went.
Okay.
And I jumped on it and drove it home from the sale, and my wife... drove the Land Rover home behind me, and I titivated this tractor, and I loved the old thing. I did. It was a nice old tractor, and I thought there's an awful lot of fuss about these selective speeds being horrible. I think it's quite nice, and with that, I wanted the rest of the family in the Ford range with this SOS gearbox.
Okay.
So I had to find a 3000 and a 4000 to go with it.
And before long, how many tractors did you? Many four tractors did you have?
There's 83 we're selling.
83.
Yes, they have more. They're not all selective speeds. The majority of them are manual ones, but there is about 20 selective speeds there.
And what do you love about the SOS gearbox, Philip?
Well, it was very advanced for its age, because it was a totally clutchless gearbox. You could go from first gear to tenth gear without touching a pedal. just by flicking a switch. Oh. And extremely advanced for his age. It was a bit too advanced. Ford hadn't properly developed it, I don't think.
Did your tractors break down?
Well, they had that reputation. But being as I've never put them to serious work, the ones that have come here in good working order have stayed in good working order. One or two I have pulled to pieces and tried to fix over the years.
And where did you store the 83 tractors, Philip?
In various barns around the farm.
Okay.
They were all packed in there, jam-pipe tight, shoulder to shoulder. Don't come and ask me do you want one in the back, because it would be a big job to get it out.
Okay, is it hard or upsetting for you to part with them, Philip?
Strangely enough, it doesn't seem to be at the moment.
Okay.
Whether it will on the day, I don't know. But at the moment, no. I'm keeping one or two because I'm still farming, so I got to have something to go to work with. Strangely enough, I'm not feeling emotional about it at the moment.
Okay, but so why now? Why are you selling them now?
Well, because I'm 77, and I didn't ought to be farming at all, really, but I am. And back in March, I had a heart attack, and I ended up in hospital.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
For 3 weeks, waiting for angiogram, and they ended up putting 7 stents in me. And while I was in there, I'd done a lot of thinking, and I thought, well, if I don't sort all those tractors out a bit, well, I can be lumbered on my daughters, and that wouldn't be fair on them.
And are any of the daughters interested in the farm?
Well, they've got their own farms.
Brilliant.
Yes, they have. They've got their own very busy lives.
And would they not take some of their dad's tractors, even for old time's sake, for sentimental value?
No, they like modern shiny stuff.
Yeah. And what do you think of the modern shiny stuff, Philip?
It's all right when it's going. But you can't fix it when it goes wrong.
And Philip...
Whereas I can fix the old ones.
And Philip, are you going to the auction yourself on Saturday?
Oh, of course I am.
But is there not a danger you'll start buying your own tractors back?
I doubt the auctioneer would take my bid somehow or other. Okay. I don't think he would.
And have you any idea, and I know we should never ask a farmer this, but have you any idea the value on them?
No.
Okay.
I've not done any sums as to what this sale might yield.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be disappointed. So,
okay.
So by not doing any sums, I've got no figure in mind, really.
And if you were to discover that somebody was buying, say, there's 83 of them or whatever for sale, that somebody was going to buy 10 of them for scrap?
Well, they can do what they like with them when they've bought them.
Okay.
I wouldn't like to think they went for scrap.
I know that.
But they can do what they like with them. When they've gone out the end of my lane, I should forget about them.
Okay. But in the 90s, it's incredible. In 1990, you were able to buy a tractor with basically had an automatic gearbox.
Yeah.
Isn't that fantastic?
The tractor that in question was actually built in 1968.
Wow.
Yes, the majority of them were built between 1965 and 1975, the majority of them was. There's one or two younger than that, but not many.
And is it just yourself on the farm now, Philip?
Yes, it is. Yes, I unfortunately lost my wife nearly 2 years ago now, and I've got some very good neighbours in the other end of the house, but yes, I'm basically on the farm on my own.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what farming do you do, Philip? Are you beef or dairy or?
Yes, beef. Beef. I've got a few suckler cows. Suck cows, I think you call them in Ireland.
Yeah.
20-odd suck cows, suckler cows, and followers. Yes, about 70 cattle in total.
And has there been much change since Brexit, Philip?
Well, the prices have improved.
Oh, have they?
Much to everybody saying they were going to be a million times worse, they've improved. For all farming produce, really.
Okay.
Beef and lamb.
And did you ever get grants, or the farmers in Europe, did they get the CAP grants? You know, the EU grants, which are now gone.
For what? What are you referring to?
Anything specific? The Common Agricultural Policy. Now, I think they were primarily for tillage as well. There used to be grants from Europe, from Brussels. But did
yes.
you...
But yes, they... I've never availed myself of any of them anyway. I haven't.
Okay.
No.
And how long will you keep farming for? I know as long as you're allowed, Philip, but if you had a choice, how long would you keep farming for?
Oh, I suppose so long as my body's able to do it, I suppose.
And were you born...
It's a way of life.
Yeah, of course. And were you born into the farm?
Oh, of course I was born into farming, yes. I was not born in Devon, I was born in Somerset.
Ah, of course. And many generations of farmers behind you.
Yes, many.
Many. Congratulations.
Many, yes.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
It's in our blood.
Yeah, sounds
as
like
it is in my daughter's blood as
isn't
well.
Isn't that fantastic? And have you grandchildren, Philip, and great-grandchildren?
I have grandchildren and greats, yes.
Well done, well done.
In fact, one of my grandchildren is helping me prepare for the sale, and he's coming over again tomorrow to put the final touches to it.
Because children...
He actually trained as a John Deere mechanic, he did.
Ah, magic.
And after a few years as a John Deere mechanic, he told his parents he wanted to come back on the farm. Which he did, so he's now back farming again.
I'd say you were thrilled to hear that.
But his love is John Deere tractors, which I perfectly understand.
Okay. you understand, but do you forgive him? Do you forgive him?
Yes, I do.
Of course you do. Of course
I think if I was a youngster, I'd probably like John Deere best.
Yeah, yeah. They've such a pedigree, so to speak, from the United States and America. Well done, Philip. And may God give you good health now to continue as long as you want on the farm.
Thank you very much.
Even though, Philip, it's a very, very hard job. 7 days a week.
We never switch off. We don't. We're always thinking about something. Is there a cow out there calving? Well, yes, there's always something to be thinking about. Yes.
And do you ever get a holiday?
Oh, I've had one or two in my lifetime. I haven't had one lately. Get away for a couple. Well, I suppose you could say I had a holiday when I spent 3 weeks in hospital. You could say that was a holiday, okay. I suppose.
But when is the last time you had a real holiday, if you follow me?
A real holiday?
Yeah.
Well, me and my wife, we went to Canada in 1989, I believe. Because
okay.
I have a brother in Canada. That was the last time I had a real, real holiday.
That's 42 years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
No, 30,
I've had weekends
32,
away and
30,
like that,
32.
But not a
okay.
real holiday.
Have you ever been to Ireland?
Pardon?
Have you ever been to Ireland?
I want to come. I've got a friend in the north, and he keeps on to me about coming over there. And
oh, you'd love it. You'd
he was
love
on the phone
it.
Only last night. Will I be over after myself? It probably won't be till next year now, but I badly want to come to Ireland. I do.
And there's loads, well, especially down around the south, around Wexford, in the south of Ireland, you can get the ferry to Rosslare. They have an incredible tractor tradition. Down
yes,
there.
And they quite like Fords, don't they, in Ireland?
And they do like Fords, they like Massey's, and then obviously Ferguson's because of Massey Ferguson because he was born on the island, as you know. There's a wonderful.
Yes,
there's a wonderful.
Was Henry Ford, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Of course, he was. He was born over in Cork. And then there's a wonder. Our National Agricultural Museum is in Wexford, Philip. You'd love it. All the old machineries and tractors and ways of harrowing and seeding and ploughing. It's fantastic. So, Philip, put that on your list, will you? Come to Ireland.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Well, God,
what's your motto in life, Philip, given you've lived on the farm?
Have I got a motto?
Yeah.
Oh, have I?
Every day?
Do the best you can every day.
Okay, don't get too upset on Saturday when you're selling your tractors. And whatever you do, don't buy them back. Okay, good man, Philip Warren.
As I said, I doubt the auctioneer would take my bid. I don't think he would.
Okay. Well, Philip, kind regards to you and your wonderful family, and also your family.
Thank you very much for ringing.
And your family of tractors that is about to disappear. Okay, Philip, good evening, Mahoga. That's Philip Warren in Devon in the UK. Now, Jerry, the reg number again, this is where we started. The reg number of the tractor we're looking for, which we've no hope of finding, is called KIR 554. Give us the description again. A Massey Ferguson.
Joe. You found everything. You'll find this tractor. You found Susan last week and it was a kind of a no-hope case. So don't say you've no hope of finding it. Yeah, it's a Massey Ferguson 148, 1972.
had, when it was bought, a safety frame. Maybe some people needed to work in sheds and they took them off. But, you know, it could be taken off by a few bolts. Probably it's scrap somewhere. I hope not. This is, talk about the puck fodder. This is as long a puck fodder as we could ever see.
Okay, we'll get the message out there, Jerry. And where do you say it was last seen, do you think?
The vehicle registrations office about 5 or 6 years ago said, we know it's in County Clare, but we can't give you any more information due to freedom of information. Yeah. They wouldn't give the name or...
So we know that reg number was still in operation?
Yes, as I say, possibly 5 or 6 years ago.
In Clare, last seen in County Clare. KIR 554, a Massey Ferguson 148. Was that a posh tractor back in its day?
No, it wasn't a posh tractor, but it was a new model that came out. The 135 was out and the 165, and this was a kind of a little bit bigger than a 135. Not a lot, but a little bit bigger. Okay. Just a new model, and sure, of course. I thought it was great having...
Well, I can imagine. You were, what, 13? This lovely...
13, yeah.
It was a Massey. It was red, wasn't it? And chromey and shiny. Yeah. Magic.
Absolutely
magic. Heaven, yeah. Childhood. Yeah. Do you have a tractor now, Jerry?
I have a tractor, but I'm involved in haulage now. I have a tractor in the yard at home, but it wouldn't be...
And how many trucks do you have on the road?
Oh, just the one.
Just the one. What's that, a Scania or a DAF? Or
a Renault.
A big Renault. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, safe travelling, Jerry. Do you hear me?
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your help. And I hope your help will be successful. But I'll make a deal with you. If anything comes out of it, I'll let you know exactly what happened.
Okay, good man.
Drafts as I find it.
Okay, Jerry. That's Jerry Nealon in Tullamore. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Back to that incredible episode in Rogerstown in North Dublin a few weeks ago, when 13 people, you heard from two of the families who contacted us, and they're trying to find out the men who helped save them. 13 people, 8 adults, 1 teenager and 4 children at one stage were in difficulties in the water. And a group of men came along, and we have been told the group of men are Adam Crinigan, Luke Talbot, Sean Nixon, David Price and Roisin Shannon. Adam Crinigan is on the line. Adam, good afternoon.
Joe, how's it going?
And well done. Tell us what happened.
So what happened? It was Sunday. We were all down having a swim. We're local to the area, and so we know the water quite well.
Yeah.
We were taking a break from swimming, and there was a commotion down at the pier. A lady ran up to us screaming that our kids were drowning.
Okay.
So quick reaction, bolted down, straight into the water, created a chain, and started passing each child from one to the next and out onto the safety of the shore.
And how dangerous is that spot?
It can be quite dangerous. Certainly, for the tides going out, the current can be very strong and can take you unless you understand the current and the way it goes.
So it's not the safest place to swim?
No, not at all, no. Further down the beach, at Rushdale Beach, would be more ideal, especially for younger years.
And are there any signs up saying, do not swim here?
Not that I've ever seen.
And who owns the beach, Adam, insofar as we know? Is it private property or is it Fingal?
No, I don't think so, Joe. No, as far as I know, it's Fingal County Council.
I know you own a motorsport company, is it?
Crinigan Motorsport. Oh,
great,
in Musk, yeah.
great. And Adam, have you ever rescued anyone there before?
No, thankfully not, Joe, and hopefully I won't have to ever again.
Okay, let me go to Luke Talbot. Have I got everyone's name in, Adam? Did I mention...
You're missing one, Keith Vaughan.
I see that. Well done, all of you. Luke, well done to you again. What happened? What's your memory of it?
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, much like Adam's, I have to say that, unfortunately, I wasn't as quick off the mark as Adam was. Adam, if I can try and describe him for your viewers, he's 6'4" man with long ponytail and a long black beard.
Okay.
Seeing him, I've never seen him move so quick in all my life.
Wow.
But look, jokes aside, you know, it was It was quite a, I told one of your producers, it was quite a harrowing experience, quite scary, but it did, it happened very fast, but I'd never seen, you know, someone, a fully grown adult crying for the safety of their children, so it was pretty distressing, but having said that, you know, within a couple of seconds, Adam and Keith and... Mm-hmm. Guys were in the water, and as Adam said, creating a chain to get the guys out.
Yeah, that was an incredible idea.
Yeah, it's unusual. It's unusual kind of a setup where there's a vicious current. Like strong swimmers like myself and Adam and Keith, we kind of take advantage of the currents. We jump off the pier and let it kind of, you know, whisk us down the beach, and then we swim out. Okay. But luckily, we're strong enough swimmers to be able to manage that. Growing up in the area. You know, knowing the waters, but this news, we got chatting to them before the incident happened. I believe they're from the inner city, and what went obviously aware of
dangerous,
ferocious, you know, that the current can be. But whatever way the tide went out that day, and at the end of the pier, it created almost a bit of a vortex, sort of pulled these kids around the pier, and that was the. Off their footing, you know, that was the dangerous part. But again, as I say, it happened very fast. Adam, Keith, and mainly I just kind of swooped in at the end.
Yeah, but Adam,
sure okay.
Adam, who came with the idea of a human rope or a human chain? Is that where did that idea come from?
The first guy in the water was a fella called Sean Nixon and his son.
Okay.
And they were kind of, they'd already kind of started creating a chain, but it just needed obviously to be continued and to be lengthened. So I have to give credit to Sean on that one.
Okay, and do you actually have to physically touch the person to make the chain? And do you have
it
to?
It was no. It's more so hand the next person who hands the next person out into the out onto the beach, next, and so on and so forth.
Well done, well done. And are you a commander? Were you in command that day? As we've just been told, Luke said you were the hero that day.
I don't want to hear any of that.
You're too modest. I know that. By the way, what you want to hear is Fran Kinsler on behalf of the two families thanking you on the other line. Fran, there's the one of the spokesperson we're calling for the time being.
How things?
Yeah, not bad.
Listen, thanks so much. I'm the one that was in hysterics that day begging you for help.
Fran, you're more than welcome.
Honestly, I can't thank you ever enough.
No, you can. We're absolutely, we were thrilled to help and delighted it went according to plan.
Thank you. Well done.
And you were lucky. Adam, have you experience in water sports or...
I'd be a strong swimmer, all right, Joe. I would have I went to school at Gormanston and would have swam in the pool up there and on holidays and that, and down the local beach, just like a fish to water.
Well done. Someone's up to text in saying, on your Facebook, did you work in Afghanistan?
Oh, here we go.
tell us, Adam. You can't. The most transparent medium in Ireland is radio.
I did. I sold Harley Davidsons to the troops over there in Afghanistan.
Brilliant. Are you serious?
Yeah, no, deadly serious, yeah.
And how'd you get involved in that?
An advertisement in the Sunday Business Post or something years ago, 2013. And I went to the interview, got the job, thought I was going to Kuwait, and they shipped me on out to Afghanistan, where the manager was also a guy from Lusk, Niall O'Shaughnessy.
Oh, God. Did you meet a manager for Harley Davidson?
He was the manager for the company MAS.
That sold it. Yeah, okay.
So, it was certainly an eye-opening experience.
And how long were you out there, Adam?
I was out there 4 years, yep.
Wow, so you must now, given the tragedy of that country now, you must be, like so many people, very upset about what's happening. But anyway.
terrible, but I won't give my opinion on live radio, Joe.
I know. Okay, Adam, well done, Adam Crinigan and Luke Talbot from the Kinsler and the Nixon families. I know when you hear this now, Adam and Luke, you're going to say no, but they feel they were in real danger that day and they owed their lives to you two boys.
Honestly,
And Keith Vaughan and Sean Nixon and his son for having the wits about them when they were in the water, and David Price and Rose Shanahan. Heroes all, including all your own family, Fran. Best of luck to the whole lot of you, the Nixon family and the Kinsler family. Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Luke. Thanks, Fran.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Martin Mooney. Martin, good afternoon. It's you're in, well, I don't know if you're in Glasnevin now, but you live in Glasnevin as a hobbyist almost. And now you've discovered another unmarked grave. And ironically, it's about somebody whose work hangs in the National Gallery we were talking about yesterday. And whose unmarked grave have you discovered now, Martin, and you want to do something about it?
Well, the grave of Joseph Haverty. Joseph died in 1864, originally from Galway. He came to live in Dublin around 1815, got married in 1916. Some of his poultry paintings were on display in London, about 27 portraits. And the one that we're familiar with is the Blind Piper, which was gifted by a member of the United Irishmen, can't think of his name, to the National Gallery.
And that's hanging in the National Gallery, and a lot of people actually had that print of that, the Blind Piper, in their family home. So why is Joseph Haverty buried in an unmarked grave in Glasnevin?
That I don't know.
Did he not make it? Like, I was looking up some, when you contacted us, I was looking up some of his paintings, and they've gone at auction for close to $500,000, $750,000. But of course, he didn't know, as like most artists, you don't see any of that. But did he die in poverty, Martin?
No idea, Joe, but 1864. Similar circumstances to Peggy Dell, 1979. She was in unmarked grave. Other, I suppose, women of note would be Marie Walker. She died in 1958, an Abbey actress. She's also in an unmarked grave.
Okay.
A lady called Annie Lord died the 25th of August, 1939, a member of the Royal Irish Academy of Music. She's a professor of music and piano teacher. She also is an unmarked grave. So they are there really, you see.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. I didn't know there were so many.
Edward Martin was the founder of, I get the words, the Palestrina Orchestra.
Palestrina, yeah, you have it right, yeah.
He's the founder. He's a playwright and a co-founder of the Abbey. He would have introduced Yeats to Lady Gregory. So he also is in an unmarked grave. So that's just something to...
And you want? But do you want to do something about Joseph Haverty?
Well, it'd be nice to get a marker at the gallery. Kind of felt you could put a little marker there to, in recognition of his work. He painted the Liberator, Daniel O'Connell, which is on display in the, I think, City Hall in Patrick Street.
Okay. My last memory of we did something like this was with the great Shane McComash, and we were contacted by somebody who had come across the grave of the O'Connor family. Remember the family that
1890,
were...
1890, yeah.
Quickly tell the story. 1890, the O'Connor family. Where were they? Sea Point.
Sea Point tragedy. Yeah, I believe it's in the book, actually, Shane, called Dead Interesting. It's a wonderful little pocket rocket-sized book. You get it in the shop in Glasnevin. Think about a tenner. But basically, I think her name's Annie O'Connor, age 13. Yeah. Went out to the back garden at Sea Point to bring in some mussels for the lunch with the house servant. Just from the memory, she served them up, boiled them in hot water, served them with vinegar or whatever. But it says almost instantaneously, the fingers and face went all prickly.
Yeah.
And doctors were called. Within 2 hours, the family were dead. The mammy...
Mary O'Connor and the daughter, Nora, the daughter, Aileen and Kathleen.
Four children were dead.
And they're buried. And that gravestone, that headstone has been beautifully restored. I think thanks to Lloyd Ryan, but thanks to Shane McComash who came on.
Nice, that was a subscription.
He pledged to do it. Now, the other story, because I wrote an essay on this after talk to Shane, the only survivor of that family, apart from the father who wasn't there, was a daughter called Maya.
Yeah.
And she became Maya Llewellyn Davies. after marriage. She married to a senior civil servant in London and member of the Liberal Party, Arthur. She married Crompton Llewellyn Davis. But then Maya Llewellyn Davis came back to Dublin again during the Troubles, and it is rumoured that Maya Llewellyn Davis had an affair with the big fella himself, Michael Collins.
Well, she befriended Collins, that's for sure.
So that's an incredible history all over the place. Incredible history. Then. Yeah. And then Mirish O'Sullivan, she translated Mirish O'Sullivan's classic Fihablinic Foss. 20 years growing, 20
that
and
was, that was Moya, yeah.
Yeah, so it's incredible. Incredible. Like, okay, we're looking. We don't think there's any Haverty relations, do we?
I know his half brother is actually in a marked grave. I think his name is Henry.
That's interesting because his half brother, I think, was a writer. Okay, the grave of Joseph Haverty, the acclaimed writer. Can we get a headstone, a small marker with his name on it? Okay, well done, Martin. Keep working, keep travelling. Lisa Marie Berry produced. Richard Byrne is the researcher. Liam Mullen on sound. BCO Daniel Keating. And Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.